The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
So let's continue our series, The State of Trump's Union. And many people have wondered, has there ever been a president quite like Donald Trump? How could America have elected such a man? Indeed, although the opinion polls suggest he is heading for defeat against Joe Biden, is it possible that the American public, despite seeing his performance in office for 4 years, could decide to re-elect him? But earlier this year, I got an opportunity to read an absolutely terrific book about the history of all the American presidents, Gimson's President's Brief Lives. And Andrew Gimson, who wrote it, is joining us now on the programme because, would it be fair to say, Andrew, he's not quite such an outlier, is he?
He's not an outlier. The founding fathers, the first six presidents, were amazing men who could hold their best, their own with the best in Europe. Then we got Andrew Jackson, and Jackson was extremely brave, a great fighter, but he was also touchy, quarrelsome, ignorant, vindictive, and a born killer. If you wanted hundreds of Native Americans slaughtered, he was your man. And he really appealed to the frontiersmen who were really angry with the people in Washington and thought that Washington looked down on them. And he won, and after he'd won, his supporters came to Washington to celebrate, and they got inside the White House. They completely smashed up the furniture, and they could only be got out again by promising to give them free punt on the lawn. Andrew Jackson was a lot rougher, actually a lot braver, but also a lot rougher than Donald Trump.
Yeah, that's a different way of draining the swamp, definitely, isn't it? But I am fascinated by them. How was Jackson regarded by the American people? Was there not a thing, well, we don't want a man like him again? Or did he actually bring in a sort of a system of, or a new way of presidents being put into office?
He did, because he sacked more federal employees in a year than had been sacked in the previous 40 years since George Washington. And they were replaced with his own people. And the spoils system was born, where the competing political parties, really, they just wanted someone who could win the election, usually an obscure person, possibly with claims to military success. One of the great things about Jackson was that he'd beaten the British, which was an extremely popular thing to have done. He slaughtered the Redcoats at New Orleans in 1815. So he did have genuine military achievements to his name. But after him, they tended to get pretty obscure people who just sort of engaged in a few skirmishes. They built them up as big figures. They got them elected, and then the jobs got handed out to the party faithful. So the only 17 presidents after Jackson and before Teddy Roosevelt at the beginning of the 20th century, only one of them was a really big figure, which of course was Abraham Lincoln. And the other 16, some of them had their points, but they were mostly pretty obscure, third-rate people. So Trump, his sort of mediocrity and his not being educated, that is not in the slightest bit new.
Okay, well, take me through some of the other presidents, and even going into the 20th century, somebody from just almost a century ago, Warren G. Harding. Tell us a bit about him, please.
Warren G. Harding was certainly one of the... He was the original product of a smoke-filled room. The Republican convention in 1920 was deadlocked, and they did a deal in the middle of the night, and they put Harding through. And before they put him through, they asked him if there was anything discreditable about him, and he said he'd have to go away and think about it for 10 minutes. And he came back and said that there wasn't, and I think this meant that he thought they wouldn't find out about his mistress, who was a very gormless young woman, about 30 years younger than him. She was already pregnant by him, in fact. They made love in a cupboard in the White House. He then died in office, having allowed rampant corruption to flourish during his 2 years as president. She asked for money to look after her baby, who had been born by then. She asked for money from the family. They didn't want to know her. And so she went public with the first kiss and tell book about a president, called The President's Daughter. Absolutely a tremendous embarrassment at the time, and added to which hardly it allowed the Navy's oil reserves to be sold off cheap, completely fraudulent thing, only discovered after his death. So actually Donald Trump's a lot brighter than Warren Harding.
Well, indeed, and he managed to get around the Stormy Daniels situation, which clearly wouldn't have been possible perhaps in previous presidencies. It is remarkable to think, though, that you get people who are, if not quite non-entities, who are not the brightest and the best, who managed to make their way to the top in Washington. But what about corruption? How about those who actually maybe have a bit of smarts about them, but get to the top to try and enrich themselves? Has that been an issue for the American presidency?
I don't think that has been so much an issue. I'm afraid there have been presidents who are terrible liars. Richard Nixon was a very, very gifted man, but atrociously unscrupulous. And of course, eventually blew himself up by having everything tape recorded in his office. And so his complicity in the Watergate break-in, the evidence was there on those tapes. Once the people looking into it got hold of the tapes, he was finished. But terrible lying about Vietnam as well. I mean, it wasn't just scandal in Washington. Of course, it was dropping more bombs on Vietnam, three times as much as had been dropped on the Germans during the war. And of course, with the same result, it didn't break the North Vietnamese. So terrible slaughter from 40,000 feet and an American defeat are really actually much worse humiliation, I think, for the whole American system and riots in American assassinations, Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy. So Robert Kennedy, so terrible stuff, really. I think it just shows how short our memories are. And whatever's happening now, we always tend to think of it as the worst thing that's happened, but actually, even within living memory, much, much worse things have happened involving American presidents.
But do we expect too much of the person who becomes American president, particularly in the media age, that we're expecting a degree of great moral and ethical authority as well as competence and brilliance in doing a job? That is too much to expect of one person.
I think we do expect too much. On the other hand, there have been great presidents. Franklin Roosevelt, the only president elected four times, got America through the Great Depression and then through the Second World War. I think Truman, who took on when Roosevelt died, turned out to be a great man as well, actually, and coped with the beginning of the Cold War. And Eisenhower kept things going very well in the 50s and Reagan in the 80s. But many of the other presidents, including the presidents since the Second World War, have had much more mixed records. I think one of the great things about the American system actually is that it can, I mean, one shouldn't be complacent, but it has survived very incompetent presidents, some of whom have been morally admirable, like Jimmy Carter, but just politically rather naive. The Iranian hostages thing, an absolutely agonizing end to his presidency and another humiliation for America. So it's not usually, I think, personal enrichment, but it is often extreme unscrupulousness. And then you get these noble people like Carter who sort of go wrong in other ways. So I think you're right, actually, that we look for a savior, and then very soon we look for a scapegoat, someone to blame when we find we haven't been saved.
For a unifier, looking for somebody who represents all the people, or have the majority of the presidents been very partisan in that they look after their electorate, they look after their party, and to hell with the rest of America?
I wouldn't say they've all been very partisan, but the ones with the really high-flown liberal rhetoric have, oddly enough, been successfully partisan. And an example of that is Woodrow Wilson. Of course, he promised to keep America out of the First World War. Then America went into the war, and he said it was a war to make the world safe for democracy. And off he went to the Paris Peace Conference after it was all over, and everyone hoped that he could sort it all out. But in fact, Woodrow Wilson, he'd never really sort of played against people of the caliber of Lloyd George from London or Clemenceau, the French leader. They ran rings around him, and he couldn't implement all the high-minded liberal stuff. He tried to get America into the League of Nations, and then even in America, he wouldn't do it with the other party. He wouldn't do the bipartisan stuff. And so the Republicans said, no, we're not having this. And of course, within 20 years, there's another war. It wasn't because Woodrow Wilson was a bad man, but he was somehow both high-minded and, in a funny way, rather narrow-minded, and couldn't cooperate properly with his opponents on the other side of American politics, let alone deal with the wily Europeans who wanted to inflict a Carthaginian peace on the Germans.
Andrew, what about the separation of powers, separation between the politicians and judiciary, also the sort of the system whereby you have Congress as well, not allowing a president to have dictatorial powers? Have there been situations, it would look like Trump at times has attempted almost to be the demagogue, the man using executive orders to bypass Congress as if he wants to take all power and control for himself. Has anyone else ever tried to do that? Has anyone ever come close to succeeding?
I don't think anyone has come very close to succeeding. The problem they more often have, the great thing about fixed terms is you know that after 4 years, you've got a chance to get rid of this guy. I mean, of course, he's always been a man so far. It will be a woman before long. But you've got after 4 years, but until the 4 years have elapsed, it's incredibly difficult, and they've impeached three presidents. The first one was Andrew Johnson, who took on after Lincoln's assassination and turned out to be completely hopeless at ensuring civil rights for the slaves, the African Americans who had been liberated. And he came within a vote of being impeached. Then there was Carter over the Monica Lewinsky thing, and of course there was Trump just very recently. None of those things has worked. So it is a drawback having a system where you can't, as you can in the parliamentary system, the Prime Minister can lose his or her majority and be chucked out and someone else has a go. That's a real problem in America, that you can have a lame duck president who no one respects anymore, that no one can get rid of until you have the next presidential election.
Now, you mentioned, Andrew, there that we've never had a female president in the United States.
Yep.
Why is that, do you think? Is there almost an misogynistic bias amongst the American electorate against women?
I think that's an element in it. I think we always think of America as a modern country because that's where computers come from and all the new things come from California. In fact, in some ways, it's a very old-fashioned country. They believe in shooting people. And probably a lot of Americans, I mean, of course, it's a very, very wide spectrum of opinion, and an educated American liberal will be as educated and as liberal as anyone else in the whole, as civilized in that way as anyone else in the whole wide world. But you go from that to people who think the federal government are a load of murderers, and you've got to carry a lot of guns to stop the feds from coming and interfering with your freedom. And, of course, a lot of evangelical Christians who tend to have very conservative views about homosexuality and abortion and probably, and in some cases, certainly about the role of women. So I think in some ways it is more difficult for a woman, and it was obviously very difficult for Hillary Clinton because she'd been beaten by Obama when she tried to run before. She wasn't as good a speaker as him, and she was open to the accusation that she was basically a hypocrite. She was just there because of her husband, and she pretended that she cared about ordinary Americans. In fact, she thought they were all a basket of deplorables, and she'd rather spend time with billionaires in the Hamptons than with any ordinary American citizen. So she was not a very good woman candidate. All the same, America is modernizing, America is changing. Who knows, Biden might get in and then his deputy might come in as the first woman president. It's bound to happen before very long, but it's more difficult in an American system, I think, funnily enough.
Of course, up until now as well, what about the role of the president's wives? Because largely ceremonial, hasn't it? And also been rather menial tasks put their way, despite the fact that you would have had some very important and maybe talented women like Michelle Obama, Hillary Clinton herself, and would there have been others as well who were underutilized and underused because a woman's place was to support her man?
Well, Dolley Madison, who was married to James Madison, father of the American Constitution and the fourth president, she was a great figure in Washington. She towered over her husband. He was sort of shy, retiring scholar. She did all the entertaining, and she went on doing it long after he was gone. She was a sort of great. And when the Brits burned down the White House in 1814, she rescued the portrait of Washington. She had it cut out of its frame and taken away before the Brits got there. The Brits then ate the food that had been there for Dolly and James Madison and drank his wine. They burnt the place down because the Americans had invaded Canada and burnt down the British, the capital of British Canada. So it was a kind of revenge attack. And Dolly was great doing that. She was quite sort of a heroic figure. And she remained around in Washington for a very long time and showed other first ladies how to do it. So they have, and then similarly, Eleanor Roosevelt, she was a very, very big figure. So there have been big figures before, as well as some rather anonymous ones. But it's a very funny system, at least seen from London, because, of course, they are head of state as well. So, I mean, the Queen and the royal family in the UK take a lot of that strain, and that additional sort of ceremonial strain on the First Lady. In some ways, a very exposed position.
Okay. Andrew, the line, unfortunately, is not as good as I would hoped it would be. I have lots of other things I would love to ask you about, but I think we get a great sense there of what a book that I really enjoyed enormously when I read it earlier in the year. It's a fantastic way to dip in and out of the lives of all of the American presidents. Gimson's Presidents, Brief Lives from Washington to Trump. Thank you very much for joining us, Andrew Gimson, here on The Last Word of Today FM.
Thanks for having me.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.